We'll call the meeting to order of the Commerce Committee. A quorum is present, and Representative Katiza Watoon, have you had a chance to review the minutes, and would you possibly make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Vice Chair. I motion that we move the minutes.
Approve the minutes from the last meeting of January 29th. Is that your motion?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there any discussion to the motion? Any yes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Our agenda today includes presentations from Commissioner Kelly of the Department of Commerce, who I understand is en route. And so having taken care of our official business, we're just going to take a brief recess while we wait for Commissioner Kelly to enter the room.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Steve Kelly. I'm Commissioner of the Department.
Yeah, I got to call us back into. I'm sorry. Commissioner, I'm going to return us from recess and come back to order here in the Commerce Committee. And our next item of business is a presentation from Commissioner Kelly of the Department of Commerce. And Commissioner Kelly, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Steve Kelly, Commissioner of the Department of Commerce. And our agenda today, I recognize that for some members of the committee, the topic of conversation today will be very familiar, but for others it will be new. So we're trying to hit the sweet spot in balancing an overview with some more in-depth information. As you know, the Commerce Department is Minnesota's insurance regulator. Commerce approves health plans for sale in Minnesota's individual, small group, and fully insured large group markets. Only about 30% of Minnesotans obtain their health insurance coverage in these markets, but that's still over a million people in our state. We share regulatory responsibilities with our colleagues at the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services. Commerce is the primary regulator for Minnesota's commercial insurers. The agency reviews rate and policy filings and oversees the financial solvency for all of Minnesota's health insurers. MDH is the primary regulator for HMOs and county-based purchases. MDH staff review health insurers' networks and conduct quality reviews. The Department of Human Services administers the state's public programs. Our department works with MDH and DHS on market stability and healthcare program reform efforts. It's one of the things that I've been discovering in my first few weeks at the Commerce Department is that the expertise of the staff at the department is an extremely useful resource for the other departments and as part of these broader healthcare reform discussions in ways that I had not fully anticipated before joining the department. Before getting into the state of the individual market, here's some background on the policies that are sold in that market. Plans sold in the individual market are compliant with the Affordable Care Act. Individual market plans also offer comprehensive coverage and include coverage of the Essential Health Benefits Set, or EHB. The EHB includes vital benefits like emergency services, maternity care, and mental health treatment. Each plan is assigned a metal level, bronze, silver, gold, etc. Metal levels convey to the consumer what the actuarial value of the plan is, as well as what the typical cost-sharing responsibilities will be over the plan year. Rates proposed by health insurers must pay for expected policyholder claims and expenses for providing the insurance. Health insurers price their plans according to the company-specific assumptions of what the market and their company's share of the market will look like in a coming year. Rates can only vary by geography, age, tobacco usage, network, and plan design. Health insurers are not allowed to base rates on the health of the enrollee. Health insurers take into account their fixed costs when developing their pricing assumptions and must detail those costs fully as part of annual rate filings with Commerce. Commerce's actuaries review health insurers' filings for compliance with Minnesota law. Commerce is an effective rate review state as designated by the federal government, meaning that the department has the authority to reject proposed rates. Under Minnesota Statute 62A.02, rates can be disapproved if they are excessive, inadequate, discriminatory, or not actuarially justified. Looking at the individual market in 2014 through 2017, I think it's fair to say there was a good deal of turmoil in the market. Between 2014 and 2017, rates increased and consumers in the individual market were affected. In 2015, claim costs exceeded premiums collected by 38%. Costs were driven by high-cost claims and healthy people leaving the market, and those costs were passed on to individual market enrollees in the form of higher premium rates. In addition, federal programs that provided stabilization assistance expired. Minnesota health insurers reacted with rate increases, narrower provider networks, and in 2017, the largest carrier in the individual market withdrew. Consumers who were not eligible for federal tax credit assistance absorbed these rising costs in full. Consumers were faced with difficult choices. They had to weigh whether they could afford to buy insurance, and if they could, whether they could afford to use their insurance when they got sick. I want to stress that Minnesota was not unique during this time frame. Similar issues occurred in other states. But that doesn't diminish how Minnesotans were affected by these rising costs. The Commerce Department heard directly from many Minnesotans about those rising health insurance costs. Beginning in 2016, consumers could submit comments to the department as part of the rate review process. For example, in 2016, a woman from Gaylord wrote to us, "We've always purchased health insurance, even when not mandated, and now we are being penalized. Our policy has a high deductible and only covers preventive measures. What are consumers to do?" Also in 2016, a man from Prior Lake wrote, "To single out one group of holders to bear the burden of rate increases is simply unfair." So then transition to the market between 2017 and 2018. Following a second consecutive year of double-digit rate increases, Minnesota passed two state-based market stability programs in 2017. First, the state established the Premium Subsidy Program in January of 2017. This program provided a 25% discount to Minnesotans who were not otherwise eligible for premium assistance. The program was administered individually by the health insurers and operated by Minnesota Management and Budget for the state. The program ultimately cost approximately $137 million and served 118,000 Minnesotans. Last May, the Office of the Legislative Auditor released a review of the program, which I encourage members to read if you'd like additional details on that program. Then in April 2017, the legislature established a state-based reinsurance program, the Minnesota Premium Security Plan, which I'll talk about more in a minute. This meant that Minnesotans who needed to purchase their own insurance had a market in which to do so. Each carrier who was in the market in 2017 returned for 2018. Premium rates remained flat or decreased, and 82 counties had two or more plan options, while every county had at least one. In 2018, the market stabilized, and it did so at a reduced size. Enrollment decreased from its peak in 2015 of over 300,000 participants to approximately 155,000 insureds in 2018. Consumers moved from higher value metal level plans to lower value metal level plans. The market also became older on average, with a disproportional increase of enrollees in the 50 to 64 year old age band. I'd be remiss to not mention that Minnesota, as well as every state in the country, had their individual market influenced by national activities through both 2017 and 2018. In 2019, the individual market saw continued signs of stabilization, and by that I mean the plan decisions in 2018 for the year 2019. Premium rates decreased on average due to lower than expected utilization of medical services lower costs per service, the overall strength of Minnesota's economy, and the presence of the state's reinsurance program. This slide shows the final average rate change from 2018 to 2019 as calculated by each health insurer. The decreases range from 7.4% to 27.7%. As I mentioned earlier, rates vary based on age and geography. This means that costs look different across the state. For example, a 40-year-old in the Twin Cities buying their own insurance could buy the second lowest cost silver plan for $300 a month, a decrease of $27 from 2018. A 40-year-old in Duluth could buy the second lowest cost silver plan for $332 per month, but that price point is a decrease of $94 a month from 2018. A family of four in the Twin Cities can buy the second lowest cost silver plan for $1,464, a decrease of $134 a month from the prior year. In Rochester, the second lowest cost silver plan for a family of four is $2,356, which is a lot still, but it's a decrease of $552 from 2018. The market also saw stabilization in terms of plan availability. The map on this slide shows which health insurers have plans for sale in each county of the state. We saw an improvement from 2019 in the number of counties with two or more options, which is good for consumers who want to choose the best option possible for themselves and their families. I'll now switch to a brief overview of the current status of the state's reinsurance program. The state's reinsurance program is funded through a combination of state and federal funding. Federal funds are required to be spent first, so any federal dollar received is a state dollar that is not spent. The legislature appropriated $271 million for 2018 and 2019 for the reinsurance program. In 2018, the federal government provided approximately $131 million. While the program operates under a five-year waiver granted by the federal government, it was only funded for 2 years by the legislature. The maximum amount the program could spend in 2018 was capped at $271 million, so the maximum amount of state dollars that could be spent on the program is about $140 million. Final costs for 2018 are not yet known, and I will talk about the schedule for when we will know that data in a moment. The reinsurance program is administered by MCHA, while Commerce serves as the fiscal agent for the state and federal government. Minnesota's reinsurance program model is commonly referred to as an attachment point model. There are three key terms to remember: the attachment point, the reinsurance cap, and the coinsurance rate. The attachment point is the dollar amount at which reinsurance payments begin to be made on a claim. The reinsurance cap is the dollar amount at which reinsurance payments stop being made on a claim. Between the attachment point and reinsurance cap, a health insurer is paid a portion of the claim's costs at a certain rate. So under Minnesota's reinsurance program, by reimbursing health insurers for 80% of claims costs that occur between $50,000 and $250,000 in a year for that claim. As I mentioned a moment ago, the program's final costs for 2018 are not yet known. Carriers have reported three quarters worth of data to MCHA, and through three quarters, the reinsurance amount reported by health insurers is just over $84 million. 58% of those claims came from the metro area, with 11% from the Rochester area, with the other geographic rating areas of the state accounting for 2 to 8% of the claims. We expect the number to change, likely significantly, by the end of the year, because claims often do not reach the $50,000 threshold until later in the year. We expect to receive an initial estimate of the size of the program by mid-February. The total cost of the program in 2018 will help inform policymakers as decisions are made about the future of the program. Health insurers reported fourth quarter claims data as of December 31st, 2018 to MCHA last week. It's important to note that this reporting does not include any claims runout. So claims payments made this year on claims incurred last year will not be included. MCHA expects to report that data publicly by mid-February. Going forward, end of year 2018 data will be collected in the second quarter of this year. That information will be validated and reported publicly by June. Reinsurance payments for 2018 will be made in one lump sum payment to each eligible health insurer by August 15th. We were also asked to comment briefly on other states' reinsurance models. Several other states have established state-based reinsurance programs. Minnesota was the second state following Alaska. There are now seven states in total. Minnesota's program uses the most common model, the attachment point model, which is the same model that the federal government used for its reinsurance program in the early years of the ACA. Alaska and Maine use different models. Alaska uses a conditions-based model, which covers claims based on a diagnosis rather than a claim that reaches a specific cost. Maine uses a hybrid of the two approaches in a model described as an invisible high-risk pool. Maine leveraged an existing pre-ACA program running in that state and combines the features of both Minnesota and Alaska's models. Thank you again, Mr. Chair and members, for your time. I'd be happy to respond to questions with the assistance of Mr. Brickwetty.
Thank you, Commissioner Kelly. I think the first question comes from Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I ask Commissioner Kelly a few questions on his presentation today, I'd like to thank Representative Davids and others for last biennium for championing the reinsurance program. I think we're seeing today that that has actually provided some well-deserved and needed relief for Minnesotans who are in the individual market. Past chair of this committee, Representative Hoppe, also very actively involved in putting this together. And as the commissioner pointed out, we will not know the final numbers that the plan will be paying out through reinsurance until the second quarter, but the numbers do look good, and so I appreciate that. And I also know that we are contemplating a bill here in the legislature that would continue that plan of success that we have had. Commissioner Kelly, two quick questions for you. Number one, you talked about the gold, bronze, and silver level programs. Which is the most popular plan and why in the state of Minnesota, if the department has any information on that?
Commissioner Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Peter Brickwood, Assistant Commissioner of the Commerce Department, Representative O'Driscoll. I think we don't have a final analysis for 2018, but we saw a significant movement in the market towards those lower value products of bronze, I think, possibly silver, depending on where you are in the state.
And Representative O'Driscoll, you had another question?
Follow up on that, Mr. Chair. Mr. Brickwood, if you're saying the lower end, would that be the lower cost end or the lower metal end, or are they really kind of the same thing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Driscoll, thanks for the clarification. I'll be a little bit more precise. Thank you. Just warming up. As the commissioner said in his presentation, the metal levels describe the actuarial value of the product. So lower level metal level products, so a bronze product relative to a gold product, would have more consumer cost sharing responsibility, the trade-off being lower premiums typically. It's possible to construct different types of products at each metal level depending on the cost sharing responsibilities for the consumer, but typically you would see lower premiums in a bronze level product, but probably more cost sharing responsibility during the course of the year if you are going to the doctor.
Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Commissioner Kelly, two questions for you. I'll ask the harder question first, or at least it's the one I think is the harder question. Do you have any updates that you can share with the committee at this time that you may be making for recommendations to the governor on what to move forward from the last time that you were here a few weeks ago?
Commissioner Kelly?
Mr. Chairman and Representative O'Driscoll, regrettably, no updates are available at this point. The conversations among the departments, as I indicated in my testimony, it is not just the Department of Commerce, but also the Department of Health and Department of Human Services that are responsible for developing ideas and data related to this question and then making recommendations to the governor and lieutenant governor. And those conversations among the departments are still continuing.
And Mr. Chair, my final question to the commissioner at this time. This one I know is completely and totally within your purview, so you can answer this. Any update on who you're looking at for your director of insurance or deputy commissioner for insurance? We didn't have a candidate at that time. You said there were a number that you were looking at. Can you provide the committee an update on status from the last visit with us at that on that topic?
Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Driscoll, I think it's appropriate to say that I have not started interviewing candidates for that job yet.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Commissioner Kelly has not lost his political savvy, having moved it from the legislature to the job of commissioner. Congratulations, sir.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, good to see you again. Hope all is well. In terms of the reinsurance program, and this is either yourself or staff, there's this deal where, kind of, for lack of a better word, we did too good of a job. We lowered our rates, so now the federal government is telling us they don't have to provide us as much assistance, and they've cut that. Can anyone update us or kind of brief the committee on their methodology and how they came up, and why are they punishing us for doing a good job?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Brickwetty will know the specifics, but I think I should just note that my perception of the federal government is that they don't need a rational reason for some of the actions they've been taking. So, Mr. Brickwetty.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, I believe you're referring to the updated estimated amount of federal payments that the state is scheduled to receive, which the state received in early December. As Commissioner Kelly indicated, the federal government provided approximately $131 million on funding under the terms of the state's 1332 waiver, which is the technical thing that we have from the federal government that allows us to operate the reinsurance program. That was for 2018. So that dollar amount is locked in. What we received in early December, as did all of the other states that have state-based reinsurance programs, was an updated estimated amount of the funding that the federal government expects to pay Minnesota for plan year 2019. That dollar amount was reduced by approximately $99 million from the previous estimated amount, which we had received in 2017. The federal dollars that flow to the program, not to get too far into the weeds, are essentially the estimated amount of dollars that the federal government estimates it would otherwise pay in tax credit assistance to consumers, absent the existence of the reinsurance program. So they have updated that amount. We expect that amount to be finalized this April. So that number could yet still fluctuate up or down. The 2018 number fluctuated between the original estimate, which was approximately $139 million, and the eventual $131 approximately that we received. The rationale, I defer to the commissioner's comments, and it is a combination of analysis between the Treasury Department and the Center for Medicaid Services, CMS, and they have published some information through Treasury's website about what the calculation looks like. I don't know if we've seen all of that. I would stress, though, that due to the structure of the program, and the way that the legislature appropriated a full funding amount for the 2018 and 2019 plan years, that the program's operations will not be affected, but rather the potential state-federal split between how much state money gets spent in 2019 relative to what we had been previously expecting will change.
Mr. Chairman, and
Representative Garofalo,
either of the testifiers. So you and Mr. Brickwood, you mentioned this, is that this is meant to model what the federal government would have paid but for state policy. And because we were successful in bringing premiums down, now the federal government is saying, well, we don't have to give you as much. Whereas if we were dumb and had premiums go up, they would have gladly written a check. It's more of a comment than I sometimes wonder about our partners in the federal government and exactly if they understand what they're doing. With regards to the issue of reinsurance, when do we as policymakers have to make a decision in order for it to be effective for next year's plan year? Like, what is our deadline for that?
Commissioner Kelly.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Garofalo, it could be a little bit later than this, but the information that we're operating on is that if we could act by the first half of March, that that would be desirable.
Okay. And Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, and I'm not asking for any breaking news or any policy releases today, but is it a fair statement to say that when the governor's budget comes out in February, we will know the direction that we're going on this? That if it's included, obviously we see it, but if it's not included, we know we're not going that way? Is that a fair statement? Again, I'm not asking for any details. I'm just wondering if the omission of information in the February budget is necessarily indicative of what will not be happening.
Commissioner Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, I think it's fair to say that the governor and the governor's staff is anticipating that the budget recommendations made would include budget recommendations related to health care.
Mr. Chairman, just a final statement. I don't know how reinsurance became partisan. I don't know. I didn't get the memo on that, but apparently it's become partisan. You know, these things, these sort of things happen in election years, but like today, I literally saw a TV ad against Representative Rarick where he's, as we all know, he's got this little special election thing going on. He's being attacked for supporting reinsurance. And I don't know when this happened again. I wasn't included in the conversations when this happened. I'm hoping that Governor Walz and the majority parties of both chambers will recognize that reinsurance is not the only solution, but it is certainly one of the tools we should be using to advance our shared goals of expanded access, lower price, and consumer choices. There's a lot of other things that need to happen in conjunction with that, but I'm hoping that you and the Walz administration and your budget recommendations see fit to include that one portion of an overall comprehensive plan. Thank you, Commissioner.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, on that point, what the political parties choose to do with respect to campaigns is one thing. I can say that the conversations that we've had regarding the merits of different solutions have not included partisan-based approaches.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the Commissioner, and just a brief aside here with the Garofalo question, he really didn't get an answer. The question was, does the governor in his plan, is he planning to do something with reinsurance? Your answer was, he's looking at things with health care. Well, that doesn't answer if he's looking for something with reinsurance. Of course, I have quite a history on this. When the ACA started to destroy the individual market, and I had said, go back and listen to the tapes from 9-10 years ago, and I was up on the House floor and in committee saying exactly what was going to happen, not because I'm a rocket scientist, but because I can read and I understand insurance. And when you start a downward spiral, when you have adverse selection, and that's exactly what the ACA did. We had adverse selection, so all the unhealthy people got on with the healthy people, and the thing blows up. That's what happened. Now, I'm not going to relive history here. I'm a fixer, and that's why I had the reinsurance bill. And I want to thank Mr. Brickwitty, and I want to thank Commissioner Rothman for hustling like I've never seen hustle before to get those waivers done. That was a big deal, and you did it, and it worked. Now, we can pat ourselves on the back that prices went down 27%. Well, 27% of what? Because of the ACA, prices went up over 110% over a five-year period. Then we bring them down with the rebate, 25%. And I did make a mistake there because in the bill when we did the rebate, we said any extra money would go back to the general fund, back to the health care access fund, which was a huge mistake because we could have done it for another year, which really would have helped. Now, some people have said, well, it's only 3% of the people. It's only 5% of the people. I'll tell you what, in my district, it's got to be over 15 because my folks are self-employed farmers, they're self-employed business folks, and they are getting killed by this. When I started in the insurance business, 82, you know how many health carriers we had serving the people of Fillmore County? Over 200 health care companies. You could buy insurance policies from over 200 did business in the state of Minnesota. Now in Fillmore County, we have one, and people can't even go to the clinics that are in the county. So we have a real crisis here. Now, it was made better somewhat by the reinsurance plan. We did get more carriers in, and if you look at the numbers that you pointed out there, every county except five have two carriers. five of us have one, which is pathetic, if you think about it for just a second, compared to the way it was before. But like I said, I'm not looking back, I'm looking forward. And another issue we have to address in my mind that we can't seem to get our arms around is geographic differences. Why is the metro area in Dakota County X, and because of the Mayo effect in southeastern Minnesota, it's double the price, or whatever the numbers are? Now, that's wrong. That has to be addressed. In fact, a couple years ago, Representative Liebling and I worked on had an amendment together, if you can imagine that, to equalize premiums. So Representative Liebling and I were asking, there's eight districts, we're asking seven other districts to raise their prices so we could even off ours, and guess how far they went on the House floor? Oh, you heard a very loud thud when that hit the ground. So we need to know as a committee, this is one of the biggest decisions this legislature is going to make, is what do we do with reinsurance? During the last election, if you did reinsurance, the things against me, you're evil. The DFL won the majority basically on the reinsurance bill, if you look at the numbers. So it's evil and should be destroyed, but yet we have to do something. So my question to you, Commissioner, is are we going to do a reinsurance bill? How quickly? We have to have this by March. Let's see. It's the end of January. Pretty soon it's the 1st of February. We've got a month to do this. What action is the department going to take? When are they going to get it going? How can we help you? Because believe it or not, we are here to help you, because we are here to help our constituents that have just been hosed, their financial futures destroyed in many cases because of this. So are we going to do just simply yes or no? Are we going to do reinsurance or aren't we, Mr. Chairman, if the commissioner can answer that? Are we doing reinsurance or not?
Commissioner Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, as you know from your long service with multiple administrations, the answer to that question depends on what the governor chooses to do. And at this time, I can't tell you the answer. I don't know.
Representative
Davids. Well, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Kelly, I'd like to say I appreciate that, but I really don't. We are in a crisis situation here. The governor has to get on with this very quickly, because how are the plans going to give the department rates if they don't know if there's a reinsurance plan in force or not? This is a very, very serious business. This has to be a high priority for the governor, for the department, to get this reinsurance bill that is so evil reestablished and refunded, because so that we can continue to move forward. Like I said, we're patting ourselves on the back that the rates went down 25% off of 100%. Oh, thanks. You know, they help me out as much as you can here. So we have to get on with this very, very, very quickly, or we're going to have a situation where we have 54% rate increases because we didn't do reinsurance. And some will discount those numbers. But I do have history around here, and when the health plans come and say, these are the numbers we're looking at, you know what? They're right numbers. I don't question their numbers, and I would not discount those numbers for one second, because their numbers have been accurate in the past. And I believe their numbers will be accurate in the future. So I've heard some discounting of, oh, well, it won't be 54% if we don't do reinsurance. No, I think it will be. And the folks I represent in Fillmore and Houston counties can't handle another hit like that. So we're making people go without insurance. They're not having it. At least we got rid of the law where you're a criminal if you don't carry it. I had a lot of criminals in my district because they couldn't afford $3,000 a month with a $10,500 deductible. It just doesn't work. And they were being made criminals by the ACA because they didn't have insurance. Where was that money coming from? And so we really do need some answers very, very quickly. And again, I applaud the department from last year with their actions on the getting the waivers. That was kind of a nail biter there for a while, but the quick action of the department and the legislature did get that through. So I would just, a final question here. Is, well, not final, never final with me. You know, with the numbers that the plans have come up with for increases if we don't do reinsurance again, what does the department's modeling say if there's no reinsurance bill? What do the numbers look like for premium increases if there's no reinsurance bill?
Commissioner Kelly.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, I have not been asked by anybody in the governor's office to model that, and I have not asked the staff to model that. And I, with respect to your previous point, I can simply tell you that from my observations, everybody at the Department of Commerce is treating this question as an urgent question in terms of the amount of time that we are spending on it. And I think the my colleagues at the Department of Health, at the Department of Human Services, and in the governor's office also treat this as an urgent matter. And as you know, the legislature, along with previous governors, have set a somewhat later date for budget submission by an incoming newly elected governor. And it's really up to the governor and the governor's office whether the discussion of health care will occur as part of the budget release on February 19th or whether it will occur earlier, and I have no information about that.
Representative Davis.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I do appreciate that. But what this legislature and this committee is going to be looking for is, where's the plan? What is your plan to hold premiums down? The reinsurance bill worked. It worked beautifully. But again, a 25% decrease of 110% increase is still quite an increase. But it, at least we have this trending in the right direction now. So I'll look forward to working with you, Commissioner, and Mr. Brickwitty. We have to move very quickly on this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Daly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nice to meet you, Commissioner and Assistant Commissioner. I represent Goodyear County and Wabasha County, so Red Wing, Lake City, down to Wabasha. And I cannot emphasize enough Representative David's comments and the frustration, and he used the term financial ruin, how accurate that is for my constituents. I have farmers, electricians, plumbers, small business owners that are paying up to $40,000. So again, a 25% reduction on that is, I mean, it's laughable, and it breaks my heart talking to these folks when we don't have a solution to this problem. I want to carry it a step further and make sure that you can appreciate it's creating really an economic instability in my communities, because we have companies, Red Wing Shoe, Capital Safety, et cetera, that are trying to hire and fill vacancies. People are not moving to my communities. We can match wages. We can be competitive. We have great jobs, great employers, phenomenal area to live in and raise children. But people will not move because the cost of health care is so great. You cross from Dakota County to Goodyear County, and your rates skyrocket. So it is beyond urgent that the solution address outstate Minnesota. In your slide 8, you compare some rating areas, and I would just urge you in other situations to include my county or include Fillmore County as an example. You have the metro and you have Rochester, but that doesn't at all depict what's going on in rural Minnesota. I would like to see prices and presentations so that it shines a light on this crisis that we are facing. I have some questions in there too, but I needed to make those comments. I'd like to ask you what you think the reasons are for why the state originally created the rating areas the way we did, with the majority of the population from St. Cloud all the way down to Hastings, you know, one gigantic rating area, and then we have these small pockets in outstate Minnesota, and how you would answer to my constituents, why are our prices so much dramatically different? The disparity is something we cannot maintain. So that's my first question, then I may have a follow-up.
Commissioner Kelly.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Haley, I'm going to turn to Mr. Brickwitty for the answer to the first part of that question, but I think Representative Davids made a point earlier, which is that the situation with respect to providers is different in different parts of the state, and that the process of healthcare consolidation has changed the dynamics with respect to the ability of providers to charge higher rates, and where there is less competition. I mean, it's a fairly basic economic proposition that where there's less competition, the prices tend to be higher. And so I think in without zeroing in on any particular region of the state, I think it is fair to say that where there is less competition among providers, the rates that they can ask insurers to pay tend to be higher, and that that accounts for this variation across the state in large part. But how we sorted out the particular areas, I'll turn over to Mr. Brickwetty.
Mr. Chair, Representative Haley, and I would acknowledge in following up to Representative Davis' comments, your efforts in the last biennium with your bill on this topic as well, too. And I myself have spent some time as a department staff over the last several years in communities in your district, and have heard directly from constituents in Cannon Falls and in Red Wing about the significant toll that the rising costs of their health insurance have taken. So we've heard firsthand from many of our shared constituents. To your initial question about how the geographic rating areas were set, and I can follow up with the specific details and documents of this, but prior to the implementation of the ACA, states were directed to create geographic rating areas, and there were minimum standards set by the federal government about how many a state could have, and then what sort of the rules were for constructing them. So the minimum number of counties that could be in them, they all had to be contiguous, et cetera. The federal government indicated that states had to have at minimum a number of geographic rating areas equal to the number of metropolitan statistical areas in the state plus one. So in Minnesota, we have 8 metropolitan statistical areas plus one is 9, and that is how we arrived at the 9 that we have. States have the ability to potentially change geographic rating areas. That requires not only a state statutory change, but approval by the federal government. So one of the things we've talked about in the past is when proposals to change it legislatively have occurred, we just want policymakers to know that there's an additional step that also requires federal approval, even if we were to change our state law.
Representative Haley.
Thank you for that explanation and those comments. I guess I would like to just suggest that we continue to look at that, because the problem isn't getting any better. And I understand the ACA mandated statistical area plus one, but it didn't tell us how we could draw those boundaries. So we in some ways have created this situation.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Haley, just one follow-up comment. Sorry, as I'm recalling back from 2012 when this was going on, so I apologize for omitting this at the beginning. But the Commerce Department, along with our partners in the Health Department, did go through a public process and solicited comments. So we still, I believe, have those comments on file that we received during that process on the original boundaries that were set, so we can get those to you.
Okay. Can I ask a...
Representative Haley. Okay.
This is a different question, but I'm curious. It was slide 12, or page 12. You mentioned that the trends, this was the trends for 2019. So the top two trends you mentioned, lower utilization and lower costs of care. So I'm interested in utilization. Is that because people weren't going to the doctor because they couldn't afford to go to the doctor? Or are we really seeing behavioral change and a healthier population? And on lower costs, are you saying that the cost of health care is declining?
Commissioner Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haley, as I indicated elsewhere in the testimony, we did see people moving to lower metal level plans, and in some of those cases with the higher shared cost by the insured, there may have been a decision by the insured not to seek care that they would have sought with a different level plan. That could be a contributor to the lower utilization levels. And lower costs, I think there has been less of an increase in provider costs to the plans. I think that's what that trend reflects. Now, whether that continues or not is always a good question, because we've seen provider costs vary in the past, and they could become inflated again in the future.
Thank you. One final comment, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much. in my district, I would say that lower utilization is that people will tell me, well, I have a plan, but I can't afford to go to the doctor. So I have insurance, but I can't afford care. And just in closing, thank you for your comments, and I'd just like to say your success in helping us solve this is the most important thing we can do, I think, this legislative session, and absolutely the most important thing for my constituents and probably for most of our constituents. And I would agree with Representative Garofalo. This is at all not partisan. This would be, for me, one Minnesota. So I encourage us that we all need to work together and get this done. Thank you.
President Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've had a smattering of complaints from constituents about a purported lack of transparency and accountability in the reinsurance program. When an insurer submits a claim to the reinsurance pool, do they submit all of the usual information that would be on a normal medical claim, or is it abbreviated some way that makes it difficult to report what the money's being spent on?
Commissioner Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Elkins, maybe Mr. Brickwedy can answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, to your question, health carriers, let me frame it this way. So MCHA, which was formerly the state's high-risk pool, was repurposed by the legislature to be the administrative agent for the program. So in that capacity, MCHA has a series of vendors that they have contracted with to run claims operation as well as auditing and accounting. So the way that the process is set up to work is that on a quarterly basis, eligible health carriers submit information to MCHA through the third-party vendor. They do so in a technical format that is similar to what carriers are submitting to that same vendor. Who on behalf of the federal government is operating the federal risk adjustment program. That information is submitted, and then that's what's in the quarterly reports that we've received thus far, the information, some of which was in our presentation earlier. There will be an end-of-the-year report that we would expect to have more detail. I think the reports that we have received thus far, the quarterly reports, have become somewhat more detailed, and we have encouraged MCHA to include as much detail as possible about the information that they're receiving from the plan so that that information is available to policymakers and to the public.
President Elkins.
Yeah, so would that information include, which procedures are being performed and which diagnoses are being used to justify the performance of those procedures?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Elkins, my understanding is that part of the one data element that is being collected from plans, and this might be a question to post the plans themselves too, it does include de-identified information about what the claimant has been, the claimant's hierarchical condition code or HCC
code,
and whether or not they have more than one. In some cases, I think claimants may not have one at all, depending on where they are in the claims process. That information, I think, could indicate some information to policyholders, or excuse me, to policymakers about kind of who is in that mix, like what types
what
of
kind
claims
of conditions
are between $50,000 and $250,000 or exceeding $250,000 and outside of the corridor. I think that would be useful information to policymakers to better understand the universe of Minnesotans who are being served through that program on as the taxpayers have funded it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at, Mr. Chair, is that, is there information that could help us better understand what kinds of things are driving claims against the reinsurance pool? Is it particular conditions, the performance of particular very expensive services? I think that would be useful to us.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things here. First of all, to the previous gentleman's comments, I've been doing this a long time, and I've never had anybody, clients or constituents, say I'm concerned about the transparency of the health care, the health plan or the health carrier. I've never seen that before. So what do we do? Where do we go from here? What's the plan? The department doesn't have a plan. Chair Halverson has a plan, a bill to continue the reinsurance with some different thoughts on that. So the governor talked about Minnesota Care buy-in, which doesn't work. It blows the budget. It shuts down rural hospitals and clinics because the way you get the price down is by cutting reimbursement rates. So that doesn't work. Our esteemed chair of the Health and Human Service Committee, Chair Liebling, was quoted in the paper last month saying that, well, we're not ready for universal health care yet. And, Representative Liebling and I, we agree on so many things. That would be one of them. So if the department doesn't have a plan, I would just, this really isn't a question, it's more of just to the majority party folks. I mean, there's a lot of responsibility being in the majority. I've been on both sides of that. What's the plan? Department doesn't have a plan. The Minnesota Care buy-in doesn't work, just the numbers don't work. Chair Liebling, I agree with her, saying that universal health care, we're not ready for that, and that's basically a dollar and cents issue. So just, you know, be pondering what do we do and how quickly do we do it, because we really have to move on this. 1 month, just a little over a month from now, we have to do this. And I think Representative Haley made a very, very good point in that people have health insurance. You got the card, it says health insurance. I got one here. People have health insurance. Oh, no, that's my card to the Continental in New York. So people have health insurance, but they don't have health care because there's a $10,500 deductible and they have health insurance, but they can't go until conditions get really, really bad. Then it costs us more because they should have been in 5 months ago. So that's a very, very good point. You may have coverage, but you don't have it. Oh, this is the health card? Okay. Well, I only have one choice in my district. That's Blue Cross. So, and it's a good choice. Nothing wrong with that. So with that being said, we got to have some plans. So we got a month here, guys. Let's get on with it and get this plan going. Work with the department, the governor's office. And let's cut the politics. Let's cut the Minnesota Care buying, universal health care. That's not real. We have to get real on something that can work to help our folks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to underscore some things, and I also want to just bring this into perspective. As I was looking around the committee room today and watching members as the commissioner was presenting and as members of the GOP party who are members of this committee who have had experience in working on the reinsurance program and knowing how difficult that was to get the reinsurance program in place, and the Commissioner highlighting some of the successes on that today. I did a quick count. 35%. 35% of the members of this committee are in their first term. And usually an assignment to this committee, you have to have been around it for about three or four sessions, at minimum sessions, if not terms, because this is big stuff that this committee deals with. It's the balance of Minnesota's regulated industries, real estate, insurance, appraisal, the list goes on, alcohol, as we've seen through our overviews. And folks ran on health insurance, and I ran in my area on the successes that we've had, and I've been congratulated by a lot of small business owners for doing that. And as Representative Davis has pointed out, we got to have a plan. And I really want to thank Chair Halverson. She is not here. Representative Davis and I both signed on to her bill to extend the reinsurance program. Mr. Commissioner, if the governor isn't able to give the legislature an inkling as to the direction, we'll drop a bill on his desk, and then he can decide how he wants to handle that. I don't mean that in a negative or pejorative way. I'm just talking to you about the facts, because that's kind of what we ended up having to do when we were working with the previous administration on trying to figure out a way to be able to get there. The legislature finally just said, we're going to have to put something on there to try to help Minnesotans. And 50%, 54%, 52%, pick the number, is what the industry is telling us, that those premiums are going to go up. I'm with Representative Davis. They have to be spot on in the past they've had, in the present they are, in the future they have. Because if they're not, they're out of business. That's it. They are out of business if their actuaries are messed up. So we have to take our job and our charge on this committee very seriously. Whether this is your first term in the legislature, whether it's your first tour of duty on this committee, or whether you are a veteran on this committee, please put your phones down, be serious about the stuff that's in front of us, work with your chair, work with your counterparts on the Democrat and Republican side, because we do have some ideas that are going to work. We've got a 5-year waiver. Let's go to the end of the waiver. buy some time into the future for us to figure out a more sustainable plan. We've got to do something, and that should be the number one thing that this committee deals with until we get a signed bill by the governor. And obviously we're going to have to work with the Senate as well, but please, for the people in your district and for the people of the state of Minnesota, we've got to get this done, and time is running out. We're done with the first 20% of this legislative session. 20%! We haven't even talked about a budget. We haven't talked about anything. And yet we have this big elephant in the room, or donkey in the room. I'm bipartisan on this, right? And we got to deal with it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and thank you, Commissioner Kelly, for joining us today and for your testimony and work for Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you very much for your time and the attention you've given to this important topic.
Thank you. And the next item on our agenda is a presentation from Catherine Kmit, the Director of Policy and Government Affairs at the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Give her a chance to come down to the testifying table.
Hi, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, while we're getting set up here. My name is Catherine Kmit. I'm with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, which is the state's trade association representing Minnesota's 7 nonprofit health plans, and I'm glad to be here today. I hope I know how to run this thing. Okay. So you got a lot of information from the commissioner, and I'm going to skip over some of these slides and kind of cut to the chase where we can go directly to the issue of reinsurance. Just to give you a snapshot of who we represent, these are some of the plans. These are all the plans, actually, and some of them are large plans you've heard of before and some smaller ones. I'm going to just skip through some of this. You may have read it in your materials. And I would be more than happy to come back and talk to the committee again and do like a health insurance 101 if that would be helpful, because I know there are a lot of new people on the committee. So one slide I do want to focus on, this is slide number 12. And slide number 12 gives you a snapshot of where Minnesotans get their health insurance, because I think that's kind of a mystery to a lot of people, since nearly everybody gets their health insurance through their employer. And it's something we don't really think about, because as a condition of employment, it's something that our employer helps pay, typically the lion's share of that premium, as well as the individual enrollee might pay a small portion. But I think it's important for you to see the makeup. And Commissioner Kelly's slides also alluded to this, although I will say he had more recent numbers, so my numbers are from the Department of Health from 2017. But you can see that the largest portion of the market is the self-insured employer, and these are large employers like 3M and General Mills and the state of Minnesota, for example, that have enough resources themselves that they're able to self-insure. So they might hire a health plan or an insurance company to administer the benefits for them, but but the claims that come in every month or periodically, they're all paid for by that employer. And so they are self-insured employers, and they're important to remember because they are exempt from state laws and state health care taxes under the federal ERISA law. And we won't get into ERISA now, but it's a federal, started out as a pension benefits law. Some of the lawyers in the room probably are familiar with ERISA, but it's a law that was designed to allow multi-state employers the ability to be able to offer benefits to their employees without having to follow a patchwork quilt of a number of different state laws. So they're governed under the federal government, under the Department of Labor. Then you can see the other two big chunks are medical assistance and Minnesota Care, state programs, and the Medicare program. That's about 34% of the population. And then we have 18% are covered by a fully insured employer. And so that's like an employer that I work for. My organization is a small office of 5 people, and we aren't rich enough to self-insure. And so in exchange for a premium every month, my employer buys insurance or coverage from, in this case it happens to be Health Partners, but they take on all the risk. So they've decided that they're going to cover the Council of Health Plans and their employees, and they think that based on this premium, this is how much it's going to cost, and hopefully they've guessed right. So that's a fully insured employer. And fully insured employer can also include, or also falling under that category, are people who buy insurance on their own or in the individual market. And so in this graph, it shows 4% buy on their own. 6% are uninsured. And it was just about maybe 2 years ago where those numbers were flipped. So we used to have 4% uninsured and 6% were buying in the individual market. Now those numbers have switched, and unfortunately our uninsured rate is ticking upwards, so that's not a good development. The reason I mentioned the fully insured employer, and so that's 18% plus the 4% who buy on their own, they're all governed by the state of Minnesota. So when you pass a law or you do something on state health care taxes, you have an impact on that portion of the market. But you don't, you're not going to be able to reach that portion of the market that is the self-insured, covered by a self-insured employer, and you may or may not reach people covered under Medicare, for sure under Medicare, and then sometimes under state public programs. Anyway, let me keep going and get to, I'm going to move to slide 16. So I just wanted to show you a snapshot of enrollment over time. And as Commissioner Kelly had mentioned, we had seen the numbers going up where more people were buying in the individual market. Again, we call it the Minnesotans who buy their own health insurance, but the individual market. But we're seeing those numbers decrease. And I do get questions about that. Why is that happening? In fact, we see 47% fewer people are buying their own health insurance today than they did in 2014. So we don't know for sure where all these people have gone. The state doesn't track that. It's entirely possible, and I would guess this is probably the case, where people have moved out of the individual market. Maybe they got a job with a company that pays their benefits, so they no longer have to be self-insured. Some people get coverage through their spouse. There's a variety of different ways that that could have happened. Certainly, we're seeing more people become uninsured, and that's not a good development. I can just tell you that based on the very latest numbers, I think it was last week, that MnSure just ended their open enrollment period for the 2019 year. And they said that they have, MnSure just reported signups for qualified health plans, so they're all regulated or all follow the ACA requirements through the health plans, and they all potentially could qualify for advanced premium tax credits. There are about 124,000 people who signed up for that. What we don't know yet is how many people signed up going directly to the health plan. And those would be people who maybe have a higher income and they knew they weren't going to qualify for a tax benefit, so they just went to whatever health plan directly. We're still in the process of collecting those numbers. I'm going to go really quickly. So this is kind of a busy graph, but this just shows you a brief look at what a 40-year-old buying the second lowest cost silver plan saw across the country between the years 2016 and 2019. These are state averages, but I think they can still tell us how the market is acting. So Minnesota is the little red line there, and what I want to note in this graph is how Minnesota's premiums changed in 2017 and 2018 when the reinsurance came into being. It really helped a great deal. And for that, we are very grateful, and I want to say thank you to the entire legislature for your support in that program. But you can see in 2016, and I'm going to show you another graph, another chart too, but in 2014, we had the lowest rates in the nation. By 2016, we were kind of in the lower third, but by 2017, because of all the losses and that the individual market had sustained, we were in the upper quartile of states. But in 2017, you guys passed reinsurance, and as a result, the health plans factored in that relief into their rates, and so for 2018, those rates were brought down considerably, putting us into the lowest quartile, and then for 2019, we actually have the lowest rates in the nation again. So let me show you a different graph that will help illustrate that. So this again just shows you Minnesota's premiums were the lowest in the nation in 2014, again relative to other states. By 2017, we were back in the top third. But for 2018, we moved back down into the lowest quartile, and we just learned that we are the lowest in the nation in 2019 with the reinsurance funding that the legislature appropriated and approved. So I just want to show you that the reinsurance program really helps people who buy insurance on their own, so people in the individual market. It pays the medical bills, as Commissioner Kelly said, between $50,000 and $250,000, but it doesn't pay the entire bill. It pays about 80% of that number between $50,000 and $250,000. And I want to respond to Representative Elkins. You asked a question about, well, how much is being spent and that sort of thing. No money has been spent yet. The money has been appropriated by the state of Minnesota into this fund, but not a dollar has been spent yet because we are, what is today, the 30th? We are 30 days out from 2018. So we are just finally beginning to close the books for 2018. And so those claims are still coming in. And as Commissioner Kelly said, they're going to be, they'll be finalized at some point. And then those numbers will be presented to MCHA. And then MCHA will look and see what, if all those claims qualify. And then in turn, the reinsurance money will be paid out. But I want to be really clear. What we're doing here is the health plans are already have paid these claims, have reimbursed all of these providers, the doctors, the hospitals, all the other allied providers already. But we've counted into our calculation that this reinsurance money would be there. And again, this was a really educated guess back in 2017. What's significant about this graphic is that you can see that most people are pretty healthy and don't use a lot of health insurance services during the year. It's really a small portion of the population who have chronic conditions or just have needs or develop a condition who need more care, and it's those high-cost claims that result, and especially in a shrinking individual market, that has an impact on how much everybody pays because that pool is continuing to shrink. So help is still necessary. We're seeing ways to try to get around market stability and maintaining an individual market that is sustainable. So where do we go from here? So I know this is a really busy graph, but I want to spend a little bit of time on this because I think it's really illustrative of the timing. And this is something that we didn't hear much from Commissioner Kelly because he's still working it out, working with the new governor and everything. But I want to show you the timing that happened. And a couple of people around the table remember this. But early in 2018, so that's at the upper left, the legislature passed the reinsurance program by middle to the end of March of 17. Well, we're doing that right now. Let me back up. The health plans were already preparing their rates for the 2018 year. And so knowing that that program was in place helped inform the health plans that they could account for that additional support, and they were able to file rates accordingly that were lower. And but all of this is happening right now. So, for example, right now in January of 2019, the health plans are done with 2018. They're already done with 2019. We are working on preparing the rates and the filings for the 2020 policy year. And so so we've already moved past 2019, and you can see those same kinds of goalposts or mileposts where certain things have to happen. We're required by the federal government and the state to submit these rates and filings, and they have to spend time to approve them or say we disagree with you. It goes through. It's a very highly regulated process. What I really want to make sure you understand is that we have a decision deadline. So you can see down here in red for the 2020 rates, we need to make a decision pretty soon, pretty darn soon, and because we're going to start making, we're going to submit those rates and those filings to the departments, and they in turn are going to start looking at them and processing and reviewing them. So, if we can get an extension of the reinsurance program and pass this legislation before we have to make that those decisions or submit those rates, that would be outstanding. I also want to just point out at the lower bottom on the left side where it says the premium security plan helped to reduce rates, premiums, I should say, in 2018 and 2019 by about 20% each year. And I don't know if you have it, but I just wanted to point out in the Department of Commerce's announcement about the rates for 2018, they do have in here a narrative that says the reinsurance program reduced premiums for 2018 by about 20% on average from what they otherwise would have been without reinsurance, and about 20% again on average for 2019. So this really worked. This was a fantastic program, and it really worked. I'm going to skip over this. And also, I just want to say, I put in your packets, I had to add it into your packets, just a description of what the original waiver was. Because as you know, the departments, once the law got passed, it didn't mean we were, you know, that this program was going to work. The state had to apply for a waiver from the federal government, which they did. And it, this is one page out of that waiver. I included the cover letter and then one, the section that talked about the goal of the waiver. And really in here it talks about, and I think we've achieved those goals, allowing for reduced premium increases and more affordable premiums to Minnesota residents, targeting over 20% average premium reduction from where rates would have otherwise be without the reinsurance program. And it talks about we need to promote stability of the individual market risk pool. For those of you who weren't here, it was really dicey because one plan had pulled out of the market, and people, constituents across the state were really concerned about being able to access health insurance. And so this program helped tremendously to stabilize the market. Let's see. Here's another graph that I think is worth reviewing. So what this shows you is by calendar year, here's how the money is going to flow for calendar year 2018 as the money was appropriated. So the first line says miscellaneous revenue. That is some leftover money that was as a result of the leftover funds in the EMCHA program, the pre-EMCHA program. We won't get into that right now, but the law says you have to use that money first. Then the state and that would be part of the state appropriation money. Then there's this federal match of $131 million. And the estimate that the state and I think health plans also tried to estimate how much they thought the losses could be, we came up, you know, there was this number of about $271 million. We, as you heard from the commissioner today, we actually think that the amount of claims that are going to come in from 2018 will be lower. So that will help leave some money on the bottom line. That means that because we got $131 million from the federal government, we're only going to have to spend $140 million. So there's going to be some leftover money for 2018 left over. But we think, we don't know, of course, because we're just starting in 2019, but we think that a similar situation might occur in 2019. So you can see that as Peter Brickwitty, I think, was talking about the federal match, so we got $131 million for calendar year 2018, $85 million in federal match for 2019. That's their estimate so far. It was news to me that they're going to maybe finalize that number, so maybe it'll go up. We don't know. But the point is that there's likely going to be extra money left over, state funds unspent on the bottom line. And what we would like to do is to extend the reinsurance program, just stretch it out, take those unused funds, stretch them out over calendar year 2020, calendar year 2021, calendar year 2022, and at the same time, because we have a five-year federal waiver, we can draw down more federal matching dollars for 2020, 2021, and 2022. And in my opinion, it would be a shame to leave any federal dollars on the table since we have this approval for a five-year plan. There does not need, I want to be really clear, there does not need to be any new appropriation or any new money spent, because there is enough money going to be left over that can be stretched out or extended out over the next several years. And this will really help because, as I said, we're getting ready to prepare rates and filings for 2020 for next year. And by next spring, about this time, we're going to be preparing rates and filings for 2021. That's really important because we want premiums to stay stable for 2020 and for 2021 and 2022 if we're able to stretch it out that long. We still have a lot of pressure with what's going to happen with the Affordable Care Act. Is it going to throw everything up in the air with this Texas court ruling? Uncertainty around the Medicaid program. Don't know what's going to happen with Minnesota Care buy-in option. And just plainly speaking, we need to do something about the growing expense of care. All of this is happening not because insurance companies are bad or anybody's doing anything bad, but because the cost of care is so expensive. And that's something that all of these things that we're doing to kind of rejigger the financing of this is not, we're not getting at the underlying cause, which is the cost of care. So again, timeline, right now we're preparing for 2020. In February and March, we want to extend that premium security program or the reinsurance program for at least 2 years. By late spring is the deadline for rate requests to Commerce, so we have to submit all of that to the departments. And then by fall of 2019, that's all going to become public, and people can shop on the MinSure market or go directly to a health plan, but that will all be announced in the fall of 19 and in the fall of 20 for the subsequent year. I'm not going to spend a lot of time here. I could go into this more in detail at another time, just that care costs differently across the state. And you heard a little bit about some of these situations, but for example, a colonoscopy, why does it have to be $326 in Buffalo but $1,853 in Fairmont? Something needs to be done to control the cost of care. I won't spend time here. You can see there's a smattering of where costs are across the state. Just a brief comment about the Affordable Care Act. It required everybody to have insurance, and I think initially more people did sign up in part because there was that penalty in place. Now that penalty has been eliminated. There's still a requirement, but there's no penalty. So our fear is that people will jump out of the insurance market, and that's bad. It's bad for them, but it's bad because it makes people who are really sick and need coverage will stay in the market. They'll find a way to stay in, and it just means costs are higher for everybody else. Higher medical costs equals health insurance that becomes too expensive to afford, which can lead to more uninsured people, and we don't want to do that. So the fact is premiums are so expensive because care is so expensive. And with that, I'll end my presentation and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Committee. I just want to note to the committee that we have, looks like about 6 or 7 minutes, so you can keep your questions on the brief side. That'd be helpful. Representative Davis?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I need to correct Ms. Committee. I don't think she thanked the entire legislature for the reinsurance bill. The governor didn't even sign the bill. So it wasn't the entire legislature. Could you see a scenario where, okay, you have to have this figured out by March to put your preliminary rates in. Can you do it both ways, with reinsurance and without reinsurance, and submit it that way?
Please commit.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Davids, yes, okay. We can.
Thank you.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are your members concerned that with the elimination of the individual mandate, the emergence of the short-term care plan, some of the things that you listed here, that there is going to be a more serious problem with adverse selection leading to pressure on rates?
Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Elkins, yes, we are concerned about the degradation of the individual market, and it just further threatens the stability of the individual market because people think, well, I'll just get this other plan that maybe doesn't cost as much and it's cheaper. I think I'm covered, but people who are sicker or have higher cost conditions will stay in the fully insured market, and it makes it more expensive for everybody else.
Okay. Then follow up from my previous questions. So when the data is submitted, will there be a sufficient amount of de-identified detail to be able to allow policymakers to look at what kinds of procedures and what kinds of conditions are driving participation in the reinsurance pool?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Elkins, I was looking at the law when you raised that question, and there are a number of different reporting requirements that are required under Chapter 13, which was the law that passed in the 2017 legislature. Mm-hmm. And the OLA, the Office of the Legislative Auditor, also is able to audit this program. And so I think there is going to be a lot of reporting. I know that, or it's my understanding that Representative Halverson's bill will also include some additional reporting requirements to make sure that it's abundantly clear both to policymakers as well as the public what's happening with this program as it continues so that people are well informed.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And I don't, I apologize, I don't like correcting testifiers, but there was actually an error in your presentation, if you could go back. I think it's on page 25. Was it the uncertainty one? There you go. It says uncertainty remains. That third item down, Minnesota Care buy-in option, yeah, you can scratch that off. That's not going to happen. Okay, that's not, it's a good talking point, but anyone who looks at the numbers with 30 seconds of attention knows that the Minnesota Care buy-in option, you'd have to have rocks in your head to vote for that. It's a good talking point, but you can scratch it off. It's not going to happen. Thank you.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kmet, I just want to, I listened very intently to your presentation today, and this is a topic that I have a personal and legislative desire to make sure we get it right. We have a five-year waiver in the state of Minnesota. For the last 2 years, we've had the benefit of the reinsurance program, which has brought federal money in. And from what I'm hearing anecdotally, we are in a position where the dollars that the legislature appropriated may not be touched. And you indicated that, you know, gosh, if we go one more year, two more years. I like the idea of going 3 years. Could you comment for the committee's benefit what you think that a three-year commitment by the legislature for the remainder of the waiver might do to premiums, or how that could have an impact versus maybe just a one-year or a two-year or a three-year followed-up commitment by the legislature?
Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chairman and Representative O'Driscoll, we too would like to see it extended for 3 years. As far as what will the impact be, it's a little hard to say because, first of all, we'll need to know how much money was used for calendar year 2018 of the state funds that were appropriated and for 2019, and that will inform how much the rates or the ability to provide lower rates in 2020 and 2021 and 2022. We think there's going to be enough money on the bottom line to hopefully, I mean, I can't commit for the health plans, but it would be great if we could have a consistent, stable market as we have had for the last 2 years. Also, keep in mind, we're going to draw down some federal matching dollars, and we don't know how much that is yet. But for each of those years, we'd be drawing it down.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Kmet, I understand it's really hard to predict the future because of loss ratios and managing the risk on that. But I think we could agree that it's easier to take a three-year snapshot than it is a one-year snapshot to try to figure this thing out. You've got more opportunity to be able to put under observation and planning on a 36-month or a three-year plan than you do on a 12-month or a zero plan if the legislature is unable to take action and we're unable to get cooperation from others to get this done.
Ms. Smith?
Mr. Chairman, are you asking me what would happen if we don't have a reinsurance?
Representative O'Driscoll.
I'm just asking. You can react to my comment however you feel is appropriate, I guess.
Ms. Smith.
Mr. Chairman and members, we're working with all of you very hard to try to get the reinsurance program extended. Again, we don't think there does not need to be any new money, state money appropriated. There will be federal dollars. I think, though, without any reinsurance, I think we should not be surprised to see premiums and premium rates go up, and possibly considerably. There are a number of different factors going on. It's hard to predict what's going to happen in the next 3 years. I mean, actuaries, people much smarter than me, have worked on this both at the Department of Commerce as well as in the health plans as well as outside actuarial experts, and it is hard to predict what the behavior of the population will be. Will they stay in? Will they not? Will the economy continue to be as robust? Will people get jobs that have health insurance coverage so this becomes a smaller pool? It's just there's so many unknowns, it's hard to predict.
Representative Dean.
Uh, Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Schmidt. You know, you showed us this graph that you said was super, super complicated. And I've drawn some lines with some states. And we see that some states are actually fairly stable within a certain area. And then other ones, including Minnesota, at some point go far out of line and out of whack. Has anybody done any analysis to see what those states did or what their situation was that they stayed stable? And then what were some of the factors that played into other states, whether it's states like Tennessee or states like California or states like Minnesota, what they did to try to stabilize the market?
Ms. Clement.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dean, great question. That data in particular from that graphic comes from the Kaiser Health, Kaiser Family Foundation, I should say. And so we could certainly look into that a little bit further. But I will say that prior to the ACA, really health insurance was all regulated at the state level. So every state has different layers or different types of regulation for their health insurance in their state. Some states did not have as robust regulation as Minnesota has. And so there could be different reasons why. They may have bigger, larger employers in those states. They may have more people who are on government programs. It's virtually impossible to predict or explain what happened with those individual states without getting more into the details about that specific state. But I'd be happy to do a little bit of digging into that for you.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Dean, do you have any follow-up?
No.
All right. Well, thank you, Ms. Schmidt, for your testimony for sending
down
this
everyone.
Important topic today. And that having concluded our agenda for today, the committee is adjourned.